I'm Rachel New, and I am literally on my last legs in the wild throes of perimenopause, like millions of other women in the UK and worldwide.
Imagine you knew when your last period was going to be, and you could in some way celebrate it. So you knew it was going to happen, and there was a ritual or a kind of an event around that very last menstrual cycle.
This podcast is going to lift the lid on that whole messy, confusing journey with plenty of WTFs and lols along the way.
Menopause is, there's not a moment, whatever's going on, you know, whatever it is, the mess and the muddle.
So this episode of On My Last Legs is all about creative responses to the menopause. And I thought this will be brilliant. There'll be loads of people who are making creative responses to the menopause. There'll be songs, there'll be paintings, there'll be films about the menopause. There'll be lots of stuff. And so I had a good old Google, creative responses to the menopause. Little came up. I was thinking to myself, Madonna surely should have made a creative response to the menopause, but no, nothing. One thing that does come up is a tiny little bit of an episode of Fleabag where the brilliant Kristen Scott Thomas talks about how brilliant the menopause is.
Women are born with pain built in. We have pain on a cycle for years and years and years, and then just when you feel you are making peace with it all, what happens? The menopause comes, the fucking menopause comes, and it is the most wonderful fucking thing in the world. And yes, your entire pelvic floor crumbles and you get fucking hot and no one cares, but then you're free. No longer a slave, no longer a machine with parts. You're just a person in business.
I was told it was horrendous.
It is horrendous, but then it's magnificent. Something to look forward to.
So that was singing the praises of the menopause in Fleabag by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. But there aren't very many creative responses to the menopause. But I did find one woman who is doing something brilliant and has been for a number of years. And that's Jane Woollett, who's an artist who also works in psychiatry. And she is on My Last Legs. Hello, Jane.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, yes.
I'm really glad I found you. And I wouldn't have found you if I hadn't been researching for this episode of On My Last Legs. But there are so few creative responses, so you come up quite a lot. I don't know if you've tried Googling yourself, but you're the kind of number one artistic response to menopause. Well done. You're a kind of world first.
Well, I think that's interesting in itself, because I suppose you approached me and I started thinking. And I started thinking about that kind of ambivalence or that invisibility and why that might be. Initially, I kind of was thinking of it as a negative thing, a sort of, you know, in a bit of a angry sense, you know, why? But now I'm kind of thinking that it's also part of the purpose of menopause, and that menopause, in a sense, I think, is a very personal and introspective position. And it was really strange being invited to talk about it, because I suddenly thinking, ooh, you know, it's not like talking about pregnancy where there's an outcome. You can say, and this happened, and then there's an outcome. Menopause is an absence. It's a dissolving, an unevent. In order to talk about it, what I've done creatively is think about metaphor and story and context and sort of enacting it, kind of inhabiting it, and sort of doing it as a very sort of self-conscious performance, in a sense. Yeah, and that's what I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years.
Now, is it right to say that your interest in menopause started when you did a kind of collaboration with a long-term friend who was also menopausal or getting to that point?
What happened was I did a degree, a fine art degree, 35 years ago, and I started my degree course pregnant. So I had my son in my first year, and that sort of marked and influenced my relationship with my art practice and my own sort of way of taking my own experiences and using those as what I make or do. Beverly, I met at art school. When I was 50, I said to myself that I was going to do my MA. So I did my degree. And then I've worked since then. I've been working in, as you said, psychiatry. I'm a psychiatric nurse. So I've done that. And then I thought, right, and I set it very clearly to myself, I'm going to do my MA across my 50th birthday. And within that time, my menopause very much became evident. My other son also hit adolescence. So there was this kind of juxtaposition between adolescence, menopause, and I had an opportunity to make art. Beverly and I, we were at an exhibition and we were talking. There were two women and they were making art together, and the whole exhibition was around their kind of collaboration. And we just said, shall we do that? Shall we have a go? It wasn't sort of thought through very well. But having been thinking about menopause, I think there is a kind of together and apart part of menopause. It's a kind of separation and becoming a different person. And friendships and collaborations are almost done in a together way rather than a very enmeshed or shared way, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense, and I'd not thought of it before. And I know people talk about the menopause being very lonely, and people talk about the menopause being very difficult because people don't speak about it. But I quite like your idea that if you take it as two halves, so you've got your kind of private menopause, your introspective, your time to look into yourself and say, ah, okay, this is the new thing that's happening to me, and it's not very nice, but I'm kind of dealing with it. And actually, that is quite powerful, isn't it, to take that into yourself. But you also do want to have a community and other people that you can talk to about it and share. And I suppose if you make that conscious decision to separate those things, it makes it easier to live with the lonely aspect of it.
Yes, and it reframes the whole purpose. One of the things that I've been doing is trying to kind of think of it, I suppose, in terms of evolution or anthropology, and look to the past for clues. Because it must have a purpose. That's how I see it. So I've been thinking, well, what is the role of the older woman, or just the guardian, or the person who just kind of watches, bears witness, is there with a sort of piece of advice, but isn't in the heart of the action? So it's almost like a kind of stepping back and a different position in society, or within your own family, or within your own life, your own self. It's become part of the art practice. So there's stuff that I do on my own, and then there's stuff that I'm doing in collaboration. And those two bits do seem very central somehow.
Let's talk about the art itself, because you've made lots of different artistic responses to the menopause. So a lot of the work is quite visceral and quite anatomical and red and white. I really like your boxes, your seven boxes. Talk to us about the seven boxes.
Okay, so when I was 16 years old, I had an ovarian cyst. I didn't know I had an ovarian cyst, but it burst. And when it burst, I was gravely ill, very, very unwell, had a hemorrhage. Again, it was another thing that sort of linked me to my own body and my own sort of life events. And ovaries became a sort of a little bit of a fascination or preoccupation. And one of the things with menopause is that it starts with, well, it's all about the decline of the ovaries. The ovaries eventually sort of become overwhelmed with scar tissue. The yellow bodies, the corpus luteum. So I started to make yellow bodies, and they were made of plaster and cloth and bright yellow ink. And then I kind of needed somewhere for them to go. I started looking then for boxes. Then I set a sort of frame around it, and then started to sort of think more mindfully around what I was doing. So I made a box for my ovaries. I made a box for my menopausal, my sort of menstrual tampons. I took a nail and wrapped them in red cloth, and then bound each nail and cloth with tight, tight red thread. And there is a lot of ritual and reiteration, and kind of it becomes quite repetitive what I do. So I've made flat discs again with plaster, put them into a box. There was one box though that I became over ambitious with, and started to fill it with plaster, and then I stepped back. I had plaster dust and mess and muddle everywhere, and I stepped back and I thought, I'm never going to be able to move this thing. It weighs, I should think, about 5 stone. And it's impossible. So, I mean, it stayed downstairs. It's never gone anywhere. It's never been shown to anybody.
But I love that in itself. That's like the hidden, that's like the aspect of the menopause that you can't unfathom or move or...
Yeah, it became impossible. It was the impossible box. 7 boxes, each representing a sort of, in a sense, they're like relics. That's what I was playing with, kind of relics or shrines, I suppose. Most of the materials are quite simple. There was another one that's made of bed sheets. So I took, I think there was 10 bed sheets, which I tore into strips and then placed those into a box. So they're just like this long, I suppose like a concertina or leaves out of a book. And it's a gradient, so it goes from sort of darker to no marks. And the marks are all made with rust. Yeah, they're my boxes.
You made a film in plain sight, unseen. There's no sound to it, obviously. Well, there is sound to it, but there's no words to it. I feel like I'm going to become the audio describer. Two old, slightly haggard women of no fixed time, maybe dark ages, wander through the woods. And you do this amazing series of things. You sort of fold up some cotton, which is like pads, it looks like, and you kind of lay them all out. And I'm saying, OK, this is the beginning of your cycle as a fertile woman. You're laying all the pads out ready for the periods. And then there's these balls, I presume, eggs, that you drop, that you sort of lay along the path. And I love that. And then there's this amazing red cotton and bolts of material, huge bolts of material pulled out of mud. And it's kind of messy and it's dirty and it's endless. And I mean, I won't describe the whole thing, but you go through this whole circle and there's a kind of cleaning at the end of it. There's a sort of washing of the few remaining eggs, and then there's a washing of yourselves, and then you kind of come out. And this is the point at which my partner said, oh, they look a bit younger now. And I was like, I think you're reading too much into this. I mean, have you not got other comments to make about everything else you've just seen? But you kind of come out of it unburdened into this sort of open landscape. My producer, Emma, found it a little harrowing. I found it incredibly gentle and natural. Tell me about the film.
I suppose the premise, the initial idea was, imagine you knew when your last period was going to be and you could in some way celebrate it. So you knew it was going to happen and there was a ritual or a kind of an event around that very last menstrual cycle. So the bit in the house with the washing in the bath, that's the last menstruation. And that's us kind of tending to it or each other and wrapping it up. The whole film was shot over, I think it took about a year for us to get 3 episodes where we shot it. There was really absolutely no planning at all. I make objects, so they were the props. We made some costumes out of bed sheets soaked in rust, and we kind of gathered together some of my props, some of my bits of kind of artwork. We had a filmmaker, so we had a filmmaker and myself and Beverly, and no real sort of script or idea or clue what we were doing. We've never made a film before. So Andy, the filmmaker, so said, well, do something, do some moves. And so we just started doing moves. But what was interesting, though, is that, again, we didn't ever get to menopause. It's the whole film, in a sense, was premenopausal. And I think it's this paradox of trying to grasp menopause that's become, I suppose it's made the whole project quite difficult. Because in a way, it is enigmatic. It's hard to define. It's hard to define it other than as an absence. So in order to describe the absence, we had to describe the journey towards menopause. And in a sense, it's the film, the next film we do will be more about the menopause. But for me, perimenopause and the whole kind of menstrual journey was absolutely rich with metaphor and sort of things that we could visualize. So a lot of the film is really around toiling, I suppose, sort of almost just the work of being menstrual. And I think the reason we look younger is we were shooting the whole film on a nature reserve up the road. And initially we were going in full costume and getting very ambitious with covering ourselves in red mud, but we were attracting a few comments. So I think towards the end, we might have got a bit less, there was a bit less attention to detail.
Well, more Max Factor and less mud.
Definitely a lot less mud. Because it was quite uncomfortable as well and quite sort of unpleasant, really.
I want to pick on a couple of things you said there earlier on when you were talking about the boxes. You know, you said about one of the pieces being very repetitive and wrapping the nails and cotton being very repetitive. And then you were talking about the whole ritual and the whole kind of repetitiveness again, I suppose, of dealing with a menstrual cycle. And that's a very good point, because it's something that we've had to deal with in clockwork. And there'll be, you know, during our adult lives, and I know not everyone has a very regular menstrual cycle, and not everyone has a menstrual cycle, you know, to speak of, and not everyone has a menstrual cycle that just comes and goes within a week. Some people are dogged by it. But for the majority of women, I would imagine it's something that is sort of 5 days-ish every month. Yeah. And that's a really interesting thing to kind of recognise and sit with, because that is, it's a huge part of our lives, but also it's that regularity. You can't put it off. And I know people take the pill or they have a coil.
It is the absence of that marker. You know, it is something good, bad or indifferent, or as you say, kind of present or regular. But it is something that's going on in our bodies, those kind of hormonal cycles, those fluctuations, those very present, visceral sort of things that we're dealing with. And we sort of just do it. You know, it's there. One of the conversations Beverly and I had was, you know, how many menstrual cycles have we had in our kind of lifetime? And just that marking time somehow. Whereas the menopause is not, it's different.
When you have your last period of the menopause, you don't know it's your last period until that magical, it's been a year, so you've had a menopause, you know.
And who came up with that magic 1 year thing?
A man, probably.
Yeah, initially that's what we were kind of focused on, is marking time and sort of repetition. Yeah, definitely.
Time now for a little bit of a history of the menopause. Philosopher Aristotle was the first bloke to mention menopause when he noted that menstrual discharge stopped usually between the ages of 40 and 50, and after that, women stopped bearing children. Well done, Einstein. Great observation. It doesn't make many headlines for the next 1,000 years or so, when the idea of it as a disease pops up in 1710, and it's labelled as the worst of all calamities to beset a sex that seems destined to support the largest share of human misery. That's us, girls. The largest share of human misery. Go us. Especially in menopause. Deep joy. Medical interest in menopause increased considerably in the 19th century. Bring on the horrors! Treatments included leeches to the genitalia and cervix. Ow! If you've ever had a smear, you know that's going to hurt, right? Electric therapy, opium, frictions with stimulating embrocations. I think I might be able to get on board with that one. In the 1930s, it started to be described as a deficiency disease. So, welcome to the picture, supplements, but not supplements as you might know them. Crushed ovaries of guinea pigs and testicular juice. Is that what I think it is? It was around this time in history that women started to self-medicate with liquor. And who can blame them? Pass me the gin. Let's go back to artist Jane Woollett now. So let's talk a little bit about your menopause and your perimenopause. You obviously found it inspiring, and that's good. How was it generally?
The anxiety and those kind of waves of just weird panic, they have all gone, thankfully. And those moments of just thinking, oh my gosh, what is going on in my body? They have gone. So most of it now, I would say I'm post-menopausal. I suppose, in a very perverse way, I sort of enjoyed the sort of watching it, witnessing it, thinking about it, trying to work out what bits of my brain and my body were responding, doing things. I mean, there's so many things I've found out. Our brains do slightly shrink. It does feel quite narcotic. And, you know, and I suppose my relationship with those hormones is protective and sort of comforting. You know, they cushion our skin. So those being shed and going, and then thinking, well, what's going to come in their place? What's going to be invited in? What am I going to have that I haven't got now? So my menopause was kind of fairly textbook. Some of the sleep stuff and the dreams and the insomnia was miserable. But again, I kind of just turned it into something. So I've made these, what I'm calling, or I've called, uncertainty or discomfort blankets. I suppose I embraced or tried to find some value or purpose in the precariousness of it and just sort of tried to relax with it rather than, and that's not to say that's, it's not in any advicey kind of way, it's just that's what I did. I just sort of rode it through.
It's interesting that you talked earlier about what comes next. It must have a purpose. And it feels like an absence, but it, you know, there must be something there. And it's interesting. I mean, maybe the menopause is our superpower. We just, you know, we're scared of it. We don't know what to do with it. You know, I speak to lots of people who, you know, neither of us are experts. I speak to lots of people for this podcast who know a lot about what's scientifically happening. But it's an interesting concept, isn't it, that, you know, if you just ride this exciting journey, a bit like puberty, that there might be something on the other side of it. And with that in mind, I'm also interested that you started your MA at 50, which was probably partly to do, often we begin these things when we're maybe financially stable, our kids are grown up. It can be a time of restarting things or new starts with that kind of boldness. Did you find that as well?
Yes, definitely. What I've done is kind of created metaphors or visualize it in terms of a territory. So one of the thoughts I've had is that it's like you leave a room and you go into another room. You'll never go back to that room. So what's in this new room? The other thing is I've kind of thought of it as being on the top of a hill and you can just see out. You can see behind, you can see as far out. But there does seem to me to be something about, there's a few things I've invested in or starting to think around. One of them is something to do with midwifery, and not midwifery as a sort of being with. Society needs a kind of guardian or a wise person or someone to just be witness, just to watch, and also to go to for people to go to and say, look, I know this, I learned this, I found this out. So there's something about the wise person or the guardian. I do think that society's lost valuing the role of the older person. And I guess one of the other things I've been thinking about when you asked me to join this conversation was, and I suppose it's kind of almost inevitable that I'll think about the pandemic, but one of the things I think we're all afraid of and we're being confronted with more so at the moment is death. And within the menopause is something about death and dying and grieving. And I do think that grieving is something that we need to do as a society in front of each other. It's a sort of being witness to grieving. And there's something about the menopause that feels as if it's almost a rehearsal or an opportunity to explore grieving in a safe way and a sort of preparation almost. So, yeah, there's a few of my ideas.
I wanted to ask you about your work as a psychiatric nurse, if that's okay, whether you in that role noticed anything about menopause and people's behaviour or symptoms or problems psychiatrically.
One of the things that was, I suppose what would happen for me was if people said things that were slightly sad or emotional, I would just go into a hot flush. And that was quite uncomfortable, being with the other person and being so aware of my own body just spinning out. I think a lot of what we call mental illness is probably much more, if you contextualize it socially, so the idea of women going a bit mad, I mean, the menopause does feel a bit mad. It does feel a bit unhinged. But I think within that lostness, there is a liberation. One of the things that I found when I was researching menopause is a lot of people get put on antidepressants because they're wrongly diagnosed as either depressed or with anxiety. And I think the anxiety isn't, it's not anxiety in the usual sense. So it's the way that your body and your brain are trying to kind of cope with what's going on. So I think we need more stories. I think we need more metaphors. We need much, much more of a kind of enriched language, because when I started to think about it, and I suppose, as I said earlier about this kind of absence, we're so used to talking about an outcome or, and this happened. Whereas menopause is that kind of, there's not a moment, there's not an outcome. And I think in society, we tend to look for an outcome rather than value and experience the bit in between. So there's something to be learnt or invested in or understood or just being given time with that, whatever's going on, you know, whatever it is, the mess and the muddle.
The mess and the muddle. I like that. So let's just wrap up by thinking back to creative responses, you know, which is how I found you, and I'm very glad I did. Why do you think it is that there are so little? I mean, the obvious reason that there may not be very many creative responses to the menopause is because people don't talk about it, you know, and people don't want to talk about it. And it's a sign that you're getting older. And maybe if you're a writer or an actress or a poet or a visual artist, you don't want to draw attention to it. But I kind of don't buy that, because people make art about mental ill health or all sorts of other things. And, you know, what you were saying, when you began your life as an artist, when you began your first degree and you were pregnant and that sort of came into your art. So I don't understand why the menopause has not made it into creative responses. Can you enlighten me in any way, Jane?
Well, I've been thinking about it because I am aware of an ambivalence and a sort of, what am I celebrating or what am I talking about? I think it probably is out there. It's just we don't know what it looks like. So I think at the moment there's not enough stuff out there for us to go, that's menopausal. But I do also think there is a prohibition on grieving and aging. Or maybe there's such an investment in youth and women having a sort of purpose that is very much around fertility. So it's finding the wisdom and the language and the metaphor for the other side of it all. And I just think that we're not noticing it, we're not recognising it. I think it is there, but very quietly. But there is a paradox. It's like trying to describe a distant star or something that's just slightly intangible. And I do think it also slightly lives in an unconscious dreamlike space. One of the things that happened was I stopped dreaming. I kind of stopped sleeping as well. And it felt as if I was stuck somehow. It was kind of like the whole cogs of creativity and thinking and being got stuck. And then I started moving it through. It started kind of to shift. And I think there is something in the function of, it is a quiet time. So how to show a quiet time is difficult, an absence.
We also don't necessarily recognise ourselves as a menopausal woman because we are sold this image of youth, and we try and stay young looking. We try and, you know, and we think, I'm not going to be like my grandmother was at my age. I'm going to be young and fun. And, you know, I'm going to carry on listening to new music and going and seeing bands and going to festivals. And of course, all that's great. But then when the menopause happens, you go, oh, this isn't happening to me. I'm not old enough for this. Maybe there's this point that we need to start celebrating. Maybe when we turn 40, we go, okay, this 10 years is going to be our sort of awakening and our developing, and we're going to really connect with it.
It's almost like a chapter of a book that's gotten lost or something. There's a definite absence there in terms of what's the purpose, what's to celebrate. We went to the British Museum and we sort of tried to kind of look into myths and legends and kind of what's been before, but again, is not a lot. But what they said was that they used to make little pots and effigies and kind of sacred objects, and they were put all around the house. And a lot of them were made in a very quick way, so they didn't last. And that's what I think. I think there's just lots and lots of conversations and stuff that's not being kind of captured that was what menopause was, that kind of older woman talking to a younger woman and those kind of together and apart sort of relationships, being with and watching. And the bit in the film, the kind of our idea of in plain sight, is it's in plain sight but not seen. So it's kind of there but not there. So something around that.
And you mentioned that you and Beverly Carruthers might do another film,
yes,
the sequel.
So we've moved to the idea at the moment, what if the planet is menopausal? And what if Mother Earth is menopausal, and what does she need? So we're working on the two guardians now are weeping and grieving and furious. So we're looking at the Furies and drawing a line and how angry they are, and then grieving and sorrowing and kind of lamenting what harm and damage we've done to the planet. So they're how we're kind of envisaging it at the moment. And currently we dress in costumes and charge around on the island, looking quite spectacular at the moment, actually.
So amazing.
We're in bright red costumes. Each time Beverly comes down to do some more photographs, I make the costumes more complex and heavy and difficult to wear. So they're becoming quite
burdensome.
Yes, they really are. They really are. And slightly chaotic and sort of, yeah, crazy.
Well, thank you so much, Jane Woollett, for talking to me today on My Last Eggs. It's been really lovely to have an artist on and talk about creative responses and talk about, you know, the kind of different layers and meaning of menopause and really dig into that. I'm so glad I found you, and thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was artist Jane Woollett, and you can see Jane's work, including In Plain Sight, on her website, janewoollett.com. Next week, we'll be talking to chair of the Daisy Network, Amy Benny, who actually menopaused at 15.
Because I found out so young, I've had such a long time to process it. It's taken a lot of thinking about and sitting on it, and a lot of conversations. Do I want a family? Yes, I do. What form will that take? I don't know.
And if you'd like to hear more, you can follow On My Last Eggs, with new episodes released every Monday from Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. Do send a message. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great week.